son is voting for Jack, 'cause he's got what all the rest lack. Everyone wants to back Jack. Jack is on the right track, 'cause he's got...
Welcome back to the Kennedy Dynasty Podcast. I am back again for the second part of the Cuban Missile Crisis Podcast with my friend, teacher, and historian Ryan Pryor. And he brought in the prelude great last week, and we are just rolling into the next. So make sure
we're
you're
rolling
to
the next. We're exiting the prelude.
Yes.
And we're going to the... I think this is the interlude. I'm not going to look it up. I'm too proud.
Well, you're going to get me bad reviews because people are going to be like, it's not the interlude.
Well, like, listen, if you're that person out there, shame on you. Shame on you. There's no need for that kind of. There's no need for that kind of smoke. We're all here just have a good time.
Tell
That's
me
the second
about
time
it.
I've used the term smoke in this podcast, by the way.
Hey, you're doing it.
Thank you.
It's great.
All right, where were we? Prelude. We had prelude. We talked all about the background of the Cuban Missile Crisis, which is very important because context matters, right? We've got to understand context if we're going to understand what's going on. So here we are. Picture it. All that context, all that great background information. If you haven't listened to it, go listen to it right now. Kennedy is not informed of any of this stuff going on because they didn't really know until October 15th, 1962. That's kind of the beginning of the crisis, right? It's October 15th. Kennedy isn't notified until the next day. His Secretary of Defense, or Secretary of War, I think at the time it was still called, which I'm glad they changed that because, you know, we don't want to imply that we're going to go to war all the time.
It's an interesting title. Yeah.
It was Secretary of War, I'm pretty sure.
What's your job? Secretary of War?
Secretary of War.
It's
way better than what the agricultural secretary used to be, Secretary of Hunger. No, I don't think that was.
Is that true?
No, that's not true. That's not true. We should do it some way, a podcast where we just do like three truths and a lie, and we see which one you can identify as the lie.
We're doing that.
That would be hilarious.
No doubt. That would be hilarious.
You could do three truths and a lie, and then you try to pick which one it is. I think that would be funny. But anyway, October 15th, Kennedy is notified of that they have sort of confirmed the existence of nuclear weapons in Cuba. Okay, of weapons capable of reaching the United States. They have confirmed that they are there. And so Kennedy calls together what's called the XCOM. XCOM, like the X-Men, but a bunch of old fat white guys. not nearly as intimidating, I think, depending on who you are. Unless you're like an intern in the Senate office, then XCOM was super intimidating.
For sure.
But if you're a super villain,
so much
XCOM.
To get.
Yes. XCOM is the Executive Committee of the National Security Council, XCOM, Executive Committee of the National Security Council. On October 16th, and they get together to sort of decide, okay, what was it we were going to do? October 16th, Bobby sent to contact the Soviet ambassador, Anatoly Dobrynin.
Oh, Lord.
Dobrynin. I'm going to say that again. Anatoly Dobrynin. And basically, and says, okay, hey, is this true? And Khrushchev tells him, so Nikita Khrushchev, who we talked about before, right, the sort of this attack dog of the Soviet Politburo, it tells Anatoly to say basically what I like to call the shaggy defense. It wasn't me. We don't know what you're talking about. Didn't happen. Doesn't exist. Well, here are pictures. Wasn't me. We saw missiles on the counter. Wasn't me. You've had to have heard. Come on. I didn't get enough reaction from you. You have to have heard shaggy, like, it wasn't me.
Are you talking about like shaggy, like Scooby-Doo?
No.
No.
Shaggy, the artist, the musical artist, like, got me on camera. It wasn't me. You have never heard that song?
Oh, yeah, I've heard that now. No, when you said Shaggy Defense, I was like, oh, it wasn't me with Scooby and, like, they're eating. Like,
no,
that's what
my
I thought.
No, it's not Scooby-Doo.
Both work.
Oh,
okay, whatever.
Anyway, they say no, that we have no, there are no missiles in Cuba that can go from ground to ground. We have no ground-to-ground missiles whatsoever. So Kennedy and XCOM sort of come together with five possible responses. The first is a very diplomatic response. It is nuanced. It is to do nothing. Basically, a lot of guys on the XCOM say, honestly, even if there are missiles in Cuba, it doesn't matter. It doesn't affect the balance of power in the world because the Soviets have nuclear-capable submarines. They can launch missiles from anywhere in the Pacific or the Atlantic. Also, we know that, like, we have just as many missiles pointed at them as they would at us. Like, it's not going to change the balance of power. No need to do anything. The second is diplomacy. They sort of say, like, okay, well, what if we open up back channels and we try to use our, you know, ambassadors and go back and forth, right? That's kind of the other one. The third is to basically make a secret negotiation with Castro. They say, well, let's go down and talk to Castro. Tell him we won't invade ever. We'll promise never to invade. We'll give you aid. We'll do anything you want. Just kick the Soviets and their missiles out of Cuba. The fourth is an invasion combined with airstrike capabilities. So, and this, by the way, scarily enough, is the most popular of all the options. Everyone's like, yeah, we got to invade. We need to invade Cuba. We need to send troops and artillery and air capabilities, and we have to invade Cuba. And the fifth is to engage in what's called a blockade, a naval blockade, which basically means it's pretty self-explanatory. You block people off. You block other ships off by putting a line of ships up and saying, don't go past this line. XCOM wants to invade real bad. They got the itchy trigger finger. They're like, okay, let's do it. Like, let's get in there, right? Mm-hmm. Let's go. And Kennedy, and again, in a show of understanding, of calm-headedness, says that not only would they lose probably friends in the national sphere, in the Western world, from invading Cuba, but also that they would probably lose West Berlin in the process. That if we invade Cuba, the Soviets will see no reason not to just completely, like, say, get out of West Berlin. We're coming in with troops and tanks. You can stay if you want, but you'll be captured. But Kennedy has a problem. Kennedy has a big problem. Not 1 month before, he had promised the American people in a public statement that if Cuba was ever compromised, if there were ever missiles in Cuba, that they would take action, that they would prevent that threat.
Yikes.
Right. Which is why presidents don't say anything about anything now, because they don't want to be held to account for what they did before. And they go back and forth, invasion, not invasion, diplomacy, whatever. And finally, they settle by October 21st, they settle on a blockade. They say, okay, we're going to blockade. We're basically going to tell the Soviets, stop sending missile parts to Cuba. We're going to block off your ability to send ships into the Caribbean, the Gulf of Mexico. And hopefully that will calm things down long enough for us to create a diplomatic solution. And October 22nd is when Kennedy finally reveals this to the nation, about a week after he's informed. And there's a great speech on this, which you should probably put in a segment of it, where Kennedy sort of explains what's going on. He sort of informs the nation that that the Soviets are trying to put missiles in Cuba, and that here is what the government of the United States is going to do in response to that.
Yeah, I'll put that right here.
Good evening, my fellow citizens. This government, as promised, has maintained the closest surveillance of the Soviet military buildup on the island of Cuba. Within the past week, unmistakable evidence has established the fact that a series of offensive missile sites is now in preparation on that imprisoned island. The purpose of these bases can be none other than to provide a nuclear strike capability against the Western Hemisphere. Upon receiving the first preliminary hard information of this nature, last Tuesday morning at 9 a.m., I directed that our surveillance be stepped up. And having now confirmed and completed our evaluation of the evidence and our decision on a course of action, this government feels obliged to report this new crisis to you in fullest detail.
Guys, I am so excited to share with you a company that I've teamed up with and I know you'll really love. History Horde lets you experience the past firsthand by bringing you genuine small relics from history. Serving in World War II is such a huge part of JFK's story and overall such a monumental time in our history as a whole. Because I've studied and I love collecting things from that era, I got the World War II collection and I absolutely love it. With an incredible display and certificate of 100% authenticity, it's truly amazing to hold a piece of history in my hands. They also have items from other periods like the Civil War, the Golden Age of Piracy, medieval times, and even coins from ancient Rome. You can get your own World War II collection or one of the other many amazing artifacts by visiting www.historyhorde.com, which I'll link in the show notes, and use the code KennedyDynasty with no spaces to get 15% off your order. If you're listening to this podcast, then you probably love history. And if you love history, I'm telling you, you have to check this company out. So again, visit www.historyhorde.com. That's historyhorde.com. And use the code KennedyDynasty with no spaces to get 15% off. Happy shopping.
Isn't it crazy, by the way, that I don't see a situation in the modern world, given the war on terror and subterfuge and all that kind of stuff, where presidents would even acknowledge the existence of things like this. I don't feel like there would be, like, in the modern, do you see what I'm saying? Like, I don't see until things are over and done with. Like, if there was actually a national crisis like this, a worldwide crisis, I don't see a president coming out and saying it until it was over with.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying, especially one that technically the average American person wouldn't have under their nose anyway without the president putting it there. So, yeah, I see what you're saying.
Well, what would be the even in this situation, like, does telling the American people do anything for them? Because they can't do anything to affect this.
It probably just caused the hysteria.
Which it did. I mean,
right. But he probably did it because he was afraid it would leak out before, and they wouldn't have heard it from their president.
My wife's mother and father are both older, and my mother was the daughter of a colonel in the Air Force who was stationed in Florida at the time. He was in charge of an entire wing of B-52 bombers. He would have been in charge of launching them to go and drop bombs. And she says they weren't scared at all. They knew. That's why I said earlier that on the base, the people in the military were like, "Yeah, it's fine." Like things. He knew that there was a very little chance that they were actually going to launch bombs or launch bombers. Caroline's dad had no military in his family. He said they were flipping as shit. Like they were they were super concerned.
Oh, so, I'd be terrified.
Right. Exactly. Like if you have no insider knowledge of this, you'd be terrified. And so it is. The communist world responds to this provocation, this Kennedy speech. The Chinese government says that there are 650 million Chinese citizens firmly standing behind Cuba and Castro and says, hey, we're here for you, communist bros, communist comrades. And the U.S. goes into so you've heard of DEFCON, that goes to DEFCON 2, which is the highest it's ever been in the history of the United States, was DEFCON 2. It goes all the way down, it goes from DEFCON 5 to DEFCON 1. During the Cold War, we were at a constant state of DEFCON 4. And I think right now, we're like DEFCON 4 as well, but we've been DEFCON 5. But it was DEFCON 2, which is the highest it's ever been. I'm going to say DEFCON one more time.
Drink when you hear DEFCON.
we put bombers in the air. We put all of our nuclear submarines on ready alert. This is where things get interesting. This is the escalation period. So about seven to 10 days after the initial reports, all of a sudden we've got nuclear weapons flying over. We've got nuclear capable planes flying in and around Soviet airspace. We're ready to fight. Interestingly enough, most historians and people who have studied this period recognize that this was actually, even though this was a period of escalation, we were probably farther away from nuclear war than ever before during that time, during those couple of days. Why? Because the Russians weren't doing the same thing. The Russians did not mobilize their air force. The Russians were not mobilizing their submarine fleets for some reason. Probably because Nikita Khrushchev knew that at the end of the day, this was all a show of force and not necessarily a provocation. But there's speculation on that. On October 26th, so we're about 11 days into the crisis, Kennedy then comes back and brings up the idea of invasion again. So I don't know what happened. Kennedy decides, we're going to start to openly talk about invasion. Now, we think this is a part of a diplomacy move. The fact is that there was a network of Soviet spies that had infiltrated the federal government at this point. Kennedy knew this. And so he started to openly, not in secret, he and the XCOM and the Joint Chiefs started to openly plan how they would invade Cuba for a second time, knowing that the spies would then report this to Nikita Khrushchev. So Kennedy was probably, we think, making a sort of a strategic move here. He was never going to invade Cuba, we don't think. Okay? The likelihood was very low. But what he was doing is showing Nikita Khrushchev, hey, all right, step up. Mm-hmm. If you're going to continue on with this, if you're not going to back down, we're going to invade Cuba. And so without ever actually saying to Nikita Khrushchev or the people of the United States, hey, we're going to invade Cuba. And things reach a boiling point because now Nikita Khrushchev thinks that they're like, maybe they're going to invade Cuba. This is the back and forth. And October 27th, a U-2 spy plane, we talked about U-2s earlier, is shot down over Cuba. So, which is bad. The pilot is killed and the tensions escalate immediately, almost. Because that's an act of war. Shooting down another nation's plane. And the Cubans basically say, wait a minute, hold on. No, sorry, the Cubans. The Soviets basically say, no, wait, this was a Cuban SAM turret. The Cubans decided to do this without any authorization from us. This wasn't us. And Kennedy had said that he would attack if something like this had happened and was pushed to do so by his joint chiefs, by the XCOM, but decided against it. The Cuban Missile Crisis is sort of a back and forth, a microcosm of the Cold War, because throughout the entire 50-year saga of the Cold War, there were these periods of escalation and de-escalation where one wrong action could have caused disastrous consequences. But Kennedy ultimately decides that he is not going to respond, says that if it happens again, we're going to do something. Bobby is sent to talk to the... So Bobby is doing a lot of the back channeling here during this crisis. He's the one talking to the Soviet ambassador. And he basically tells Anatoly, you guys got lucky, right? Kennedy had chosen to not, against the wishes of the XCOM and the Joint Chiefs of Staff, had chosen not to attack. You guys got lucky here.
Mm-hmm.
So negotiations are going back and forth at this point, right? So they're still, so again, we've reached this provocation point. The U-2 spy plane is shot down. They're going back and forth. And the biggest contention here is that really Khrushchev wants to get West Berlin out of this deal, but he's not going to. I think he realized at this point that he wasn't going to. And what he sort of decides on is we really want the United States to take those missiles. Remember those missiles we talked about in Turkey?
Yeah.
And Italy? They really wanted those missiles gone. They did not want those missiles there. Again, like I said, that was sort of a part of the deal. Turkey is really upset about this. They're like, no, we want missiles in our... We want missiles to stay here. They're called Jupiter missiles.
Mm-hmm.
Have some really cool names like George Washington and like Minuteman. We now have Minuteman. All of our nuclear arsenal at this point has names relating to the Revolutionary War, which I don't know why. Like our current missile class is called the Minuteman missile.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the Revolutionary War. But at the time, they were called like the John Adams and the like the George Washington, the Washington whatever missile. But these were called Jupiter class missiles. Turkey did not want us to take them out because they feared Russian incursion into their sovereignty.
Right.
And the missiles sort of helped keep those Russians at bay. All throughout this, there comes a point to where during this sort of period of negotiation, we come closer as a nation, as a world, to destruction and annihilation than we have ever in the history of the United and in the world to this point. And the funny thing about it is neither, nobody knew about it. The United States government, Kennedy included, did not know about this. Of course, he would never know about it because it wasn't revealed until a 40 years later conference in Havana and have people who were participants in the Cuban Missile Crisis come together to discuss things. Now, I want to say that again. The closest we as a world have probably ever come that we know of, right? Because did not come about. We didn't know about these two things that I'm about to tell you about until 40 years later.
That's so crazy.
The first was that a U-2 spy plane had accidentally crossed during this time into Soviet airspace, causing both nations to mobilize fighter jets with nuclear-capable missiles and nuclear-tipped missiles into sort of a premature sortie. A sortie is a battle between jets and fighter planes. That almost caused nuclear war.
Mm-hmm.
Again, nobody knew about that until 40 years later. The other one, the really scary one, is the one that even the United States government wasn't aware of at the time. And it was that during what's called Black Saturday, this was that October 27th day where the U-2 spy plane was shot down and all the other things, a United States cruiser had discovered a Soviet submarine approaching, decided to start dropping depth charges, which are these bombs that you drop and they don't explode until they're down below the surface of the water. And they're designed to destroy submarines. So the submarine desperately needs air, needs to come up for air. And they've lost communication with their central command. A lot of times during this early period of the Cold War, submarines didn't have super long-range communication capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And so they would have to go radio silent. And these depth charges caused the captain of the submarine to think that that war has already started.
No way.
Yes. And so he orders the nuclear missile that's on board
to be
readied for launch.
Oh my gosh.
Nobody knows this is going on. The captain, like nobody in the government knows this is going on. Kennedy doesn't know this is going on. Hell, the Russians didn't even know about it until I think a couple months later. And on board, and so here's the one thing that saved us. Bureaucracy saved us. Because according to the rules of engagement, all three captains on board submarines in the Soviet Navy had to agree to launch a missile.
I just acted like I didn't know that didn't happen. I was like, oh, thank God.
Two guys agreed. Two of the captains said, let's launch it. The third guy, a guy by the name of Vasily Arkhipov, said, maybe not. So if it wasn't for this one guy, because they would have launched it if he'd agreed.
Oh, thank God.
There probably would have been a nuclear war.
That is nuts. I truly did not know that.
Fascinating stuff. That is, and then again, nobody knew until 2002.
Yeah,
now,
that's wild.
Now let's take a step back from the grand scope of things and talk about the fact that that kind of stuff has not only happened for the last 70 years. There's stuff we have no idea about, but it's currently happening. I'm not saying be afraid, hide, duck and cover or whatever. I'm not saying any of that. I'm just saying that be aware the fragility of civilization.
Oh, right? For sure. Yeah.
Be aware. Because, and that's, by the way, remember, again, the past is never dead. It isn't even past yet.
Yeah, there it is. There's a callback.
Right? There it is. Callback, right? It's my catchphrase. It's not my catchphrase. That was William Faulkner's catchphrase.
But, it could be yours, too. Your mantra.
Yeah, my mantra. Like, the fragility of civilization is a fascinating thing. That once, if you start studying history, if you really dig into history, you start to learn that the things we take for granted, they're not always what we seem, that what they seem, and we're always closer to the end than we think we are.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. More so in the last 100 years. Before 1940, really, not so much. You know,
well, now besides, you're scaring like, me. You know, I'm a warrior.
You're fine. Listen, is there anything you can do about it?
No.
Exactly. So you're fine.
True.
Keep living your life.
Okay, I do have a question. You said that the government wasn't really afraid, but I've listened to the tapes that Jackie Kennedy did, and she kind of says that they almost took her to the bunkers to stay with the kids, but she was going to stay with Jack because if they went down, like they wanted to go down together and all that kind of stuff. So were they, I guess you'd still be a little afraid, but do you think that they were like, really afraid, or did they really know that nothing was going to happen? I don't know. I'm just kind of confused about that.
I would say that on October 27th was the day that they, like, the one day that they felt super scared.
Okay.
Because after October 22nd, things like de-escalated really quickly. So after the U-2 spy plane is shot down, the Soviets kind of recognize this is getting really close to a hot war, not a cold war. Kennedy secretly agrees to remove the missiles from Turkey and Italy, sends that to Khrushchev, and Khrushchev is like, okay, cool, and agrees almost immediately without involving, and this is important. He agrees to the compromise with Kennedy without discussing it with the Politburo in Moscow. He's at his what's called a Dacha, which is like a summer home for Russian oligarchs. And he agrees immediately to the terms without discussing it with the Politburo. That will come back to bite him in the arsehole later. The blockade continues. The reason that the ISIS is said to have gone out into November is because the blockade did continue until we had photographic evidence that the Soviets had removed or dismantled the missiles in Cuba. The perception of this was that it was Kennedy's probably greatest diplomatic victory. Mm-hmm. The perception worldwide and in the nation was that Kennedy successfully maneuvered us through the most difficult time in our history to that point. This is where there's sort of some debate among historians about the actual significance, in that the Kennedy administration definitely played this up. They played it out as in, hey, we were on the brink of disaster and JFK brought us through it, and also used it to shame the Russians. There is debate about whether or not it was as significant as an event as it was. We know now it was. We certainly know now. But in the years directly afterwards, there was certainly a perception by the American people that they had averted disaster. And that Kennedy was directly responsible for it.
And didn't his polls go way up?
Polls went way up. Huge boost. I mean, he was almost a shoo-in for re-election.
Mm-hmm.
It also helped to solidify Democratic gains in the Senate and the House because, of course, there was a midterm that year. The other side is that Khrushchev basically lost, would only be in power for another 2 years, and he was removed as the Soviet premier by the Politburo, in part because they felt embarrassed, because not only had Nikita Khrushchev escalated the conflict to begin with, he was the one who moved to put, missiles in Cuba in the first place. He also lost, right? It's like picking a fight that you lose. It's a double embarrassment. It's one thing to pick the fight in the first place. It's another thing to lose the fight.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, so the Americans removed the missiles in Turkey and Italy, but because of our ICBM capabilities, it really didn't matter. By 1965, a whole new class of missiles would be available that would have made the Cuban missile presence null and void because of the capabilities of the new intercontinental ballistic missiles.
That's wild.
And yeah, so I mean, like I said, the Cuban Missile Crisis is this very, it's this, very sort of contentious affair of diplomacy and politics and back channeling. There's a whole lot more. I didn't go into seriously. I mean, there's so much diplomacy, but as is the case, there's this great movie called The Big Fish. I think I've talked about it before, but one of the quotes from The Big Fish that I always remember is, you want to make sure that you don't have all the facts and none of the flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And so the goal of a good history teacher is to make sure that you take the flavor and you make sure that you're not bogged down by the facts, because the facts, some people think when they tell a story, they need to include everything. But actually, you know, a lot of times you just need to include the things that are the most important. So, I mean, there's hours and hours and hours worth of more information of back channeling and secret government conspiracy and meetings in restaurants in Washington, D.C. suburbs and all sorts of really cool stuff that we didn't go into today. But certainly a win for the Kennedys, or at least JFK, I would say.
Well, I learned a lot. And I'm sure you did too, listener. And because of that, we are going to do a Q&A now.
I love it. Q&A. Q&A with R&A.
Oh, that's good.
There you see. There you go.
I don't even need to put my jingle in, but I'm going to anyway. Here it is.
Therefore, in answer to your question,
what were the different voices on Jack's cabinet saying in regards to his decisions?
So there were, I mean, we're talking about XCOM here. So they were generally in favor of invading Cuba, escalation. And who's to say why? Generally speaking, advisors get the benefit of not being the one who are blamed in the grand scheme of history for the actions at a time of great decision. But the executive committee, the National Security Council, was pretty much saying, you need to invade. And every time there was an extra propagation, especially after the shooting down of the U-2 spy plane, they were saying, let's do it. They were what we call war hawks.
Mm-hmm. Okay, this is one that I got a lot. So, and I think she means in regards to like the Bay of Pigs incident. She says, do you think that some people wrongfully blamed JFK for being at the fault of the crisis?
So blame JFK for being the fault of the Cuban Missile Crisis?
Yeah, because of Bay of Pigs.
I think it was JFK's fault, ultimately. I mean, seriously. I mean, I think the Bay of Pigs and...
Well, that's
and
a big the, bomb to drop at the end. Well, no pun intended, at the end of the podcast.
I didn't want to get into it in the interlude. Now we're in the deluge? No.
What's
the,
I don't know.
The
God.
Postlude. The postlude.
Sure.
In the postlude, I'm going to drop truth bombs. No, it was JFK's fault. I mean, you can at me if you want. I mean, we
don't
can certainly
me.
Have
I
a discussion about it. The Bay of Pigs was such a poorly planned and executed affair that was doomed to fail from the very beginning. All it was ever going to do was piss Castro off. All it was ever going to do was give the Cubans a excuse to covey up with the Soviets. That was it. And it was, again, like I said, it just wasn't going to work. They were trying to create an insurrection. By all accounts, it was a resounding Cuban victory over paramilitary forces. It was a poorly planned attack. It was diplomatically stupid because there's an economic concept called unintended consequences. Nobody thought about what could possibly lead to out of a failed invasion attempt. If you're going to do it, you got to do it big. And so it was half measures. It was never going to succeed.
We should actually probably do an episode on the Bay of Pigs because we just kind
of
glazed over it for this one because
that's
obviously Cuban Missile Crisis is way more than just that. But we should do an episode on that.
I agree. Cuban Missile Crisis is fascinating. Do a lot of do reading on it. I don't have a book per se to recommend. Maybe Allison will look into something and recommend something for you all.
I think there's one called 13 Days. So I'll actually post about that on my Instagram. Follow me on Instagram at Kennedy Dynasty, KennedyDynasty. I've got a Facebook now, so follow me there. Make sure you check my links in my Instagram bio for cool Kennedy Dynasty merch. And thank you again, Ryan Pryor, for being on my podcast again. I'm sure I'll talk to you within a month or so.
Yes, the Bay of Pigs.
Yeah, let's do it. I'll talk to you guys next week.
Come on and vote for Kennedy. Vote for Kennedy. Keep America strong. Kennedy, he just keeps rolling up. Kennedy, he just keeps rolling up.